Osho, Returning to the Source, Talks on Zen, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 9.
Bhagwan, an old man who was born in Yen but grew up in Chu decided to return to his native country. While he was passing through the state of Qin, his companions decided to play a joke on him. Pointing to a city, they said to him, "This is the capital of Yen." The old man composed himself and looked very solemn. Inside the city, they pointed out a shrine. "This is the shrine of your quarter." The man breathed a deep sigh. They pointed out a hut. "This was your father's cottage." Tears welled up. They pointed out a mound. "This is your father's tomb." He could not help weeping aloud. His companions roared with laughter. "We are teasing you. You are still only in Qin." The old man was very embarrassed. When he reached Yen and really saw the capital and the shrine of his quarter and his father's cottage and tomb, he did not feel it so deeply.
Your whole world is in your mind, or rather, your whole world is your mind. Nothing else exists. Whatsoever you see is a projection. Whatsoever you feel is also a projection. That's why Hindus have been always saying the world is illusory. It is a mirage. It appears, but it is not there. And how this illusion can be transcended? If you can understand it as an illusion, you are already on the way to transcend it. If a dream is realized as a dream, you are already moving away from it. You are awakening. The world that you see is not the reality, because the reality can be seen only when there is no mind. With a mind in between, the reality cannot be seen, it is colored. You project your mind on it, it becomes a screen. You see a woman as very, very beautiful. Others don't see that beauty at all. Does the beauty belong to the woman or to your mind? If it belongs to the woman, then everybody would look at her as beautiful. But you can find persons who will look at her and will be simply disgusted. You can find persons who will not become in any way aware that she is beautiful. And you think that the woman is beautiful. So where is beauty? It is in the woman or in your mind? Is it objective or just a subjective phenomenon? It happened once. I was sitting near Ganges in Allahabad with a friend. We were talking of God, of meditation. Suddenly, the friend lost the contact whatsoever we were talking. I also felt that something has happened, so I asked, "What has happened?" "Because you are no more here." He said, "I cannot be. Look, just near the bank, a woman was taking a bath. But we couldn't see her face. Her back was towards us. A very slender, proportionate body with long hairs. And the friend was too much excited. He was excitement. He said, "Wait, I cannot talk about God and meditation right now. It is impossible. I will have to go and look at this woman. The body seems to be so beautiful and proportionate." So I said, "You go and be finished." You could imagine the romance that was in his step. He walked, filled with an illusion, a projection. He walked very softly and delicately. And when he reached, suddenly he became sad. He came back and asked, "What happened?" He said, "She's not a woman at all. He is a sannyasi with long hairs." But for a moment, he was in a dream. But he could have been a homosexual then. Then just the opposite would have been the case. If she was a woman, useless. Then the sannyasi, a beautiful male body, would have become the poetry within him. A homosexual exists in a different world. His projection is different. A heterosexual exists in a totally different world. His projection is different. Then there are autoerotic people who does not bother about homosexuality or heterosexuality. They are confined to their own body. They exist in a totally different world. And there are people who have transcended sex. They exist in a totally different world. So the world is not there out. It is somewhere within you. And then there is a point when there is no mind. This world that you have known up to now simply disappears. Not that nothing remains. Not that everything dissolves into nothingness. No. But all that you have known simply disappears. And the unknown is faced for the first time. The world is a projection, existence is not. When the world disappears, existence is it there in its absolute glory, magnificent. But now it is not a projection because there is no projector inside. Mind is a projector. Watch it, because this is one of the roots of all your misery and all your happiness also. A man who understands is neither happy nor unhappy. He is neither in anguish nor in bliss, and that is the bliss. He simply exists without any projection. Nothing can make him more happy. Nothing can make him more unhappy. He simply, for the first time, in a deep contentment, nothing disturbs. And he can see what existence is. Those who have seen in such a way without the mind, they say the world is not, God is. The world is a projection, God is not a projection. God is the reality, and you have been missing it. You have been missing through the projections. You see something else that you would like to see. A woman doesn't exist. A man doesn't exist. A woman exists because you are sexual. If sex within you disappears, a woman disappears. But there will be somebody. Your wife will not simply disappear in air. She will be there, but she will no more be a wife. And she will not be a woman. Suddenly all projections disappear and there is God. Your wife becomes a God, your child becomes a God, the tree becomes the God, the rock becomes a God. Existence is God. Existence is divine. But that you cannot see, because that is the screen on which your projections are being imposed. That's why Buddhas have always said that if you have any desire, you cannot know the truth, because your desire will color it. If you want to achieve something, you will not be able to know reality, because the very effort to achieve something, a desire, will color. When you are desireless, when you are not in any way ambitious, when you are not moving to achieve something, when you are simply a being, totally still and quiet, then suddenly the reality appears to you. So this is the mechanism. You and the reality, and in between these two, the mind. This is the mechanism of the unreal, illusory Maya. You and the reality, and no more mind in between. Suddenly, all that is there is revealed. All mysteries open. But when the mind drops, the bridge drops, you and reality become one, because now there is no dividing line. Right now, you are there, the mind is there, and the world is there, the Trinity. All the religions have talked about the God, the Father, the Holy Ghost. Hindus say Trimurti. You must have seen three images of Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. Three faces together. These three faces disappear, because these three faces are illusory. Just hidden behind these three faces is one. With that one, there is no object, no subject. You simply see whatsoever is, that which is revealed. But to come to this understanding, you will have to understand your illusions. And you have known many, but you never learn anything. Somebody asked a very old Sufi mystic Bayazid when he was dying on his bed, that would you like to say something about man so we can be profited by it? He said one thing, that man never learns. You have passed through many experiences, but what have you learned? You remain the same. You go on playing the same game. Have you watched this, that you remain the same? Situations are different, but the game remains the same. You fell in love with one woman. The moment you fell in love, you couldn't believe that a moment will come when this love will disappear. You couldn't believe. It was simply impossible to think that your love can disappear. Then it disappeared. Then you were fed up with the woman. The same woman was your dream, your desire. If you had not possessed her, you would have cried and wept your whole life. You possessed her. You achieved. And sooner or later, the boredom sets in. You are fed up. You would like to escape. And in that moment, you never think back. You never move and look that this is the same woman you were mad. One day you were mad how to get her. Now you are mad how to get away from her. And one day you were thinking that this is the most beautiful person in the world. And now this is the same person, the most disgusting. How many times husbands think of killing their wives? How many times wives think of killing their husbands? How many times children, small children, think of killing their parents? A small boy had come home back from the school and he was very sad. The mother asked, "What is the matter? Why are you so sad?" He said, "There was a psychoanalyst in our school. He had come to test all the boys and I am the only abnormal one. So I am sad." The mother said, "What is your abnormality? What he has said?" The boy said, "He has asked a question that children should write whether they would like to kill their parents or not, and I am the only one who has written no. Everybody else has written yes." So the psychoanalyst has said that you are the only abnormal child. Every child wants to kill the parents. A moment comes when the lover will like to kill the beloved. And she was the goal of all his desires, of all his dreams, of all his poetries. And how happy he was thinking to be with her. But it was only in the dreams. Reality is difficult. It destroys, shatters all dreams. Now he wants to get rid of it. And he will never learn anything. Sooner or later he will fall again in love with another woman and the same thing will be repeated again. The same, with no difference. Again he will think this is the most beautiful person. Again he will think, now there is no need to seek anybody else. Now I am fulfilled. I have got the right person. And he will not be able to see that this is the same pattern. Within few days, again he is finished. Again the search starts. Somebody else. Do you ever learn anything? Have you ever learned anything? And if you don't learn, how you can become mature? And if you don't learn and you repeat the vicious circle again and again, it becomes more and more solid within you, reaches to your very foundations. This is the state of ignorance. If you start learning, then the circle breaks from somewhere. Then you start seeing the whole pattern of your mind, how it functions. First in love, then fed up, then again in love, then fed up. Circle moves. And if you understand it, suddenly one day, the very understanding of its nonsense brings you out of it. Nothing is to be done. You have just to understand. You have just to learn through life. Move. Have as many experiences as possible. Because experience is the only school. Move and don't be afraid. But learn. Just moving won't do. you have been moving and traveling. That won't help. And if you just go on moving in an unconscious way, things become more and more engraved. You become almost a robot. You become predictable. Everything can be said about you. That's why astrology exists. Not because anybody knows what stars say. Not because anybody knows what is written in your hand. No. Astrology exists because you are predictable. You move in a vicious circle. One young girl was showing her hand to a gypsy woman. The woman looked at her hand and said, "You have fallen in love." The girl was surprised because she was hiding the fact from everybody. And the man you have fallen in love is 6 feet 3 inches, the height. She was even more surprised. Exactly. And he has black hair, long flowing black hair. No, it was unbelievable. And then the gypsy girl said that on his right thigh, he has a small mark of some wound. Then it was too much. She said, "What are you doing? How you can say these things through the hand?" She said, "Who is saying it through the hand? Because of the wedding ring. This wedding ring was with me 3 weeks before." You are predictable because you move in a certain pattern, and everybody moves in a certain pattern. If you just say anything to anybody, there are 50 chances of its being right, and 50 chances are too much. Astrologers are just clever, nothing, just cunning. They just go on talking and just watching you, how you are feeling. They feel the track just on your face that you are nodding. You have a very subtle nod when you say yes, inside also. A doctor comes to check me, a very good man, but I need not ask him anything because he goes on nodding inside or saying no or yes. If he checks my chest, he nods. Then I say, okay. No need to ask him. A very subtle nod. He will take the blood pressure and he will nod. He is not aware. You are also not aware when you show your hand to somebody. You are making indications that yes, this fits. When a line fits, then you are caught. Because on that line, now, robot-like you will move. You become predictable. So only few minutes in the beginning, the astrologer is in a puzzle. Just few seconds. Once he catches the track, once he founds the right line you have been moving, once you nod, you are caught. Now, he can go on saying things and they will fit. You are a robot. Only when you become enlightened, you become unpredictable, then no astrologer can say anything about you. One astrologer came to see me in Bombay, a very famous man. And he was discussing and he was saying, "No, this is a science." So So I said, you do one thing. You predict 1 year for me and I will contradict it completely. If you say I will not die, I will die. If you say I will die, I will not die. You predict 1 year and then decide. He never came again. He said, okay, I will come back. I inquired many times. Before that he used to come. But about you, things can be said. Because you move like a mechanism. You cannot change. You are in a grip. You have fallen in love, you will say the same things you had said to other girls. Mullah Nasruddin fell in love with a woman. And he said, you are the most lovely person in the world. The girl felt, of course, very much. She became very happy, flattered. Looking at her face, Nasruddin said, wait, because this I have been telling to other women also. The same. Just watch when you fall in love. You exactly repeat. Exactly, not a single thing changes. Mullah Nasruddin divorced his wife and after 12 years they met in a function. By accident they were sitting by the side. When Nasruddin became too much drunk, as he was drunk the day he had proposed to this woman. Again he was drunk, so he said, what about one more try? Can we get married again? The woman said, on my dead body. Nasruddin laughed and he said, you have not changed a little bit. Because exactly the same thing she had said 30 years before when they had got married. And exactly the same situation was that day also. They were meeting in a function, accidentally sitting by each other's side, and Mullah Nasruddin became too much drunk, so he proposed. No man can propose if he is not drunk. How can you propose? And that day also the woman has said, on my dead body. You just go back. Just see, watch. You miss that moment of watching, but you can do one thing, you can relive it. And it is easier also. Reliving is a very beautiful process, a great and deep meditation. There is no need if you can live with full awareness in the moment. Then there is no need. But you cannot. Right now it is not possible. Then do one thing, relive. Just close your eyes every night before you go to sleep. Go back. Don't remember, relive. Because when you remember, you stand aloof. That won't help. Just relive the whole moment. You are proposing to a woman what you are saying. What you had said exactly. Say again. Move into the situation again. Become the young man you were. And the woman. Look at her as beautiful she was that day. And then move slowly. And then many women you will see. And the same. That's why Hindus say the world is a wheel. The word sansar, which Hindus use for the world, means a wheel. On the Indian national flag, the symbol is wheel, that is taken from Buddha. Because Buddha said the world is like a wheel. And you are clinging to the wheel, and you go on moving with the wheel. Become aware that you are repeating. Repetition is unconscious. become aware that you have been behaving like a robot, not like a man. Become aware, go and watch back, relive the moments, and see that you have been doing the same thing again and again, the same anger, then again the repentance, the same marriage, and again the divorce, the same falling in love and then getting fed up. If you can see and watch the repetitiveness of your life, the very understanding that you have been repeating will become a consciousness. Next time when you propose to another woman, you will feel a sudden urge of energy in you, a sudden surge, and you will be able to see that no more repetition. Then things will be different. Learn through life, otherwise things are not going to be different. And everybody thinks this time it is going to be different. You are not different. How it is going to be different this time? And if you observe closely, not only you repeat, you fall again and again with the same type of men or women in love. The same type. It has to be so. I have heard about one man who divorced 8 times. And then he suddenly became aware that what is happening to me? Somebody is playing a joke or what? Because I always fall in love with the same type of woman again. Nobody is playing a joke, because you are choosing, and if you remain the same and you have not learned, how can you choose another type of woman? Again, the same type of woman will appeal you. You will fall again in the same type of woman, and then the same circle will be repeated. 8 or 80 times makes no difference. If you remain the same, you will do the same. You will find the same person again. First appealing, then disgusting. Learn. Learn through life. And the greatest lesson is that you don't see reality as it is. You project on it. And when you project, you are bound to be frustrated sooner or later. Because the reality cannot adjust to your projection. How the reality can adjust to your projection? Who are you? You have to adjust to reality. Reality has not to adjust to your projection. That's why you are in misery. Because every time you feel something goes wrong. Nothing goes wrong. You start with a dream and the reality doesn't believe in your dream. That's all. And how can you force reality to adjust to your dream? I see a door in the wall, my dream, and then I start walking through it. I'm hurt. Not that the wall is there to hurt me. The wall is absolutely unconcerned. If I see a door in the wall, I will be hurt. Because the wall is not going to concede to my dream. Reality is vast. It is the whole. You are just a part. And you will be only mature when you stop making this absurd effort. And this is what I call sannyas, a man, a woman, who has come to realize that the reality cannot adjust to my dreams. I will adjust to reality. Immediately a revolution happens. You are childish if you go on trying again and again to make reality adjust to your demands, dreams, desires to you. Who are you? But this fallacious notion comes up when a child is born, the mother is the only reality. He is in contact only with the mother, and every desire is fulfilled. He is hungry and mother gives him milk. He is thirsty and the water is given, and he is feeling wet, the clothes are changed, and he is not feeling warm, then a blanket is put over him. Everything is fulfilled. And every child is a dreamer, has to be. The child starts feeling as if he is the center of the world. And he is here to demand, and the world is there to fulfill. And if you continue to try it, you remain a child. I see people not growing at all. They reach to their graves, but in fact they have remained in their cradles. Still playing with toys, still dreaming. And then they weep and cry, because the reality doesn't bother about them. Then they feel frustrated. Then they feel aggressive. Then they feel everywhere something is going wrong and against them, as if the reality is your enemy. It is neither enemy nor friend. It is neither. If you are aware, it becomes your friend. If you are unaware, it proves to be your enemy. In itself, it is none. Reality has no prejudice about you, of a friend or an enemy. Reality simply exists there in all its purity. It is up to you. If you start fighting with it, it becomes your enemy. If you start adjusting to it, if you start accepting it, if you start flowing with it, not upstream, but wherever it leads, you simply leave yourself to it. This is trust. This is Shraddha, faith. Science is a conflict. Religion is a trust. What is science, in fact? It is an effort to make reality according to human dreams. And you may seem in the beginning that you are succeeding, but sooner or later the success itself proves to be the greatest failure. Wherever science has succeeded, it has come to a failure. Wherever. It has changed the whole biosphere. Now ecological problems have come up. Whatsoever science has done will have to be undone sooner or later. Wherever it succeeds, it proves to be a failure. Man is not getting happier. This century is the most unhappiest century in the whole history of man. Never before man was so unhappy, and man has succeeded so much, but succeeded in something which is basically wrong. You are forcing, you are aggressive. Science is like rape on nature. You can rape a woman, but that is not a success. That is not a success at all, that is a failure. Only a man who has failed completely will try for rape. Who cannot love will try for rape. But rape is not love. Love is when the woman opens herself, surrenders, yields, becomes receptive, celebrates, dances. But then, it is not aggression. Religion is like love, science is like rape. And the whole nature is suffering by the rape. And only childish effort You cannot see any old ancient country scientific, no. Because they have come many times to that point and they have realized many times. In India, 5,000 years before, a war happened. They call it Mahabharata, the Great Indian War. And if somebody reads it and analyzes it deeply, it seems they had come to invent all the weapons that we have invented again. The H-bomb, they had something like it. Because the description of the destruction is so vast, it cannot be done otherwise. And they destroyed the whole country, not only the whole country, the whole world. Because at that time, at that moment of history, it has now almost become a myth, because no record exists. The destruction was so vast, so total, that all the records have lost. And after that, India has not tried again to be scientific. It was such a failure. It proved to be destructive, nothing else. And now we are reaching to that culmination point again in the West. But remember, the whole effort is wrong because of a basic thing. And the basic thing is that don't try to force reality according to your dreams. Who are you? And what is your dream? You are here for a few days. The reality exists beginningless. You will be no more here again. And the reality will exist eternally. Who are you? A dream in reality, which exists for 70 years. 70 years is nothing for reality. And then a dream within the dream, which tries to force reality to fall according to me. All utopians are foolish, childish. Those who know, they have come to know that the reality cannot be changed. Only thing that can be changed is me. And if I change, suddenly I can see this is the wall and that is the door. And then there is no effort to pass through the wall. One moves through the door. Reality becomes a friend. In the West, now humanity feels as if man is a stranger, not at home. If you fight with reality, you are bound to feel it someday or other that you are a stranger. Not only a stranger, but the reality is against you. In the East, we have always felt that man is at home. Reality is the mother. Reality is the womb. We are not strangers. We are not enemies. Reality loves us. That's why we are here. Reality creates us because reality loves us. And we are at home. But you will not feel that at homeness unless you try to learn one basic thing. Drop your dreams. And you live according to your dreams. And you prove to be a fool in the end. This story is just to show this how projections affect you. Let us try to understand it. An old man who was born in N but grew up in Chu decided to return to his native country. While he was passing through the state of Chin, his companions decided to play a joke on him. Pointing to a city, they said to him, "This is the capital of N." It was not. But once the old man started to think that it is my country, my capital, here I was born, now a dream starts. He is very much emotional about it. He has come back to his town. And it is not the town. But that is not the point. If you think, then it is. If you don't think, then it is not. Have you ever observed? You can pass through a graveyard if you don't know that this is a graveyard. You can go singing and laughing. If you know, impossible. If you know this is a graveyard, you cannot pass through it alive. You will have to face many difficulties, not because the graveyard creates the difficulties, just because of the thought that this is a graveyard you project. I used to live with one of my relatives. In the night, he crushes his teeth many times. So I used to play jokes. Whenever somebody will be staying new, I will tell him that, don't move through this room in the night. It is very dangerous. A man who used to live here died in the First World War. And he was recently married to a very young, beautiful woman. Poor, but beautiful, but only with one eye. The man went to war, and then he never came back. And nobody ever informed the poor woman that he is dead. She inquired and inquired, and she will go again and again to the post office for the letter. It never came. Then the woman also died, just waiting and waiting and waiting. She still waits here as a ghost. And whenever a new man comes to this house, she thinks, maybe, perhaps, the husband has come back. So she comes in the night, just takes the cover off and looks at the face. She is a beautiful woman with one eye, wears a red sari. So it is good to tell you, because if we don't tell you and it happens, you may get scared. And she never harms anybody. She simply looks, and when she feels he is not the man, she throws the cover seat, angrily she walks out. As it happens, almost always, people will say, I don't believe. And this is the right victim. Whenever someone says, I don't believe, he is the right victim. And the more forcibly he says that, I don't believe, the more forcibly he is suppressing a fear. So I told him, that is not the question whether you believe or not. But it is an experience. We are not forcing any belief on you. You will come to know. I myself never used to believe, but when I saw what you can do. Then by and by the man will start asking, and how to know that the woman is in the room? So I will tell him, you will hear a certain noise as if someone is crushing the teeth. And the man who used to sleep in that room 8-10 times in the night, he will do. Few people do. Just something is wrong in their stomach in this time. Tense. Then they crush the teeth. One woman came and I told her, she said, I don't believe at all. A very educated one, a PhD from some university, and thinks that she is an atheist. I said, that is not the point. This night will prove. She said, but I don't believe. That's very good. We don't force, but this is just our duty to make you aware that this is going to happen. It always happens. At 12 in the night, I went to sleep, and just when I put the light off, she screamed. I went in, I looked at her. She was completely unconscious. She had fainted. Because the moment she went to her bed and put the light off, the man did his thing. Exactly the right moment. It took 4 or 5 minutes for her to come, and she will look at the corner and close the eyes and faint again. The whole night I had to wait on her. By the morning, but she was feverish. And I will say, there are no ghosts, you don't bother. And she will say, now I cannot say. The woman was just standing in the corner and kissing the teeth. One-eyed with red sari. I have seen. This was a joke in the beginning. And the whole family with whom I lived, they all knew. But by and by, they also became afraid. They said, but when it happens to so many people, there must be something in it. Nobody will sleep in that room, not even that man who crushes his teeth. He said, no, I cannot sleep. Maybe something is there, maybe because of that woman, this cursing of teeth. Because doctors also say nothing is wrong. Maybe she forces or something is she is doing. Then a moment came that if somebody needed something from their room, they will come to me. Okay, you go, you just... Because nobody is ready to. Few years before I visited the room, they have locked it. Because they said, when you left, nobody is ready to enter that room. And sometimes in the night, even now, that man is no more who used to crush, but the sound is heard. People project. That's why so many ghosts exist. It doesn't depend on reality. It depends on your mind. If you are afraid, you create something. Throw your fear. A counterpart will immediately come into reality. If you love, you create something. A counterpart immediately comes in reality. You live in a cell of your own mind. It covers you like a capsule. So remember, there is not one world, there are as many worlds as there are minds. If in a home there are 5 people, there are 5 worlds. That's why it is so difficult to communicate. Because the other lives in his own world, you live in your own. It is difficult to penetrate. The town was not his town of childhood. It was not his birthplace. They were playing a joke. They said, this is the capital of Ain. The old man composed himself and looked solemn. Inside the city, they pointed out a shrine. This is the shrine of your quarter. This is the temple your parents worshipped here. And you were initiated a Buddhist in this shrine. He breathed a deep sigh. They pointed out a hut. This was your father's cottage. Tears welled up. They are creating a world around him. They pointed out a mound. This is your father's tomb. He could not help weeping aloud. They have created a world. They have given a screen and all his projections have been brought out. His companions roared with laughter. We are teasing you, they said. You are still only in Chin. Your town has not yet arrived. We are passing through another town. The old man was very embarrassed. When you come to realize, you will be also embarrassed. Embarrassed absolutely. Your whole life has been a trick, played not by companions but by your own mind. You were thinking it is beautiful and it was not. You were thinking it is ugly and it was not. And you were thinking this is to be achieved and it was worthless. And you were thinking this is not of any worth and it was not so. And everything is topsy-turvy. You live in a chaos. People come to me and they say, what is the need of a master? Why a master is needed? A master is needed to bring something into you beyond the mind, something foreign. Otherwise, how you will be brought out of your mind? You cannot bring yourself out of your mind. It will be just like pulling yourself by the string of your own shoes, pulling up. You may try a little jump, but again you will be back on the same earth. Somebody is needed to pull you out, to slap you, to sock you. To sock you so much that your sleep is broken, that your dream is broken. How you are going to do it on your own? And whatsoever you will do, your mind will be the doer. And he is the problem. The mind is the problem. How can you come out of it? How can you take a jump out of it? And whatsoever you do will be done by it. And whatsoever you think is happening will be created by it. And all the interpretations will be given by the mind. One night, a policeman saw Mullah Nasruddin. Midnight, the whole city gone to sleep, and he is passing drunk, playing on a mouth organ. So he stopped Nasruddin and said, "You are drunk again, Nasruddin. You will have to accompany me." Nasruddin said, "Sure thing. What you want to sing? What you want to sing? You will have to accompany me," he said. But when a drunken man listens, he interprets in his own way. Once he was caught and brought to the police station. And he was very angry and annoyed. And he was shouting that, "Why you have brought me here? What do you think? Who am I?" And many things as drunken people do. Then the sergeant who was on the table said, "You have been brought here for drinking." He said, "Then it is okay. So when we start?" A drunken man has no interpretation. So he said, "When we start, then it is okay." Beautiful. Your mind will interpret. And who will be a check on it? Who will tell you that this is your own mind again playing a trick? And your mind is so old, so ancient, thousands of lives, it is so deep rooted. Who will shake you out of it? Somebody who is not asleep like you is needed. That is the meaning of a master, nothing else. But your mind says, "I can do it on my own." No need. And then the master you have already chosen. Your mind is your master. There are only two possibilities. Either your mind is your master or you choose someone who is awakened. And with the mind your master, you are not going to grow at all. you are listening to the wrong source. Just because it is yours, does it make any difference? Illness is also yours, but you go to a doctor and you leave it to him. Krishnamurti has been saying that there is no need for the master. He is right and absolutely wrong also. He is right because when you become awakened, you also know that there is no need. You were dreaming, and when you become alert, dreaming stops. And then you can't feel what was the need. It was just a dream. I could have shaken myself out of it. But it is an afterthought. Even Krishnamurti needed an obeisant leadbeater. He had his own masters. It is an afterthought. When a thing happens, then you can always feel, I could have done it. But when it has not happened, you cannot even think, because your thinking will also be a part of your dream. A master is needed when you are asleep. When you will be awakened, you will also think a master is not needed. For you, of course, the master is not needed. But then many will be deluded. Because many egoists will surround you, as you will find. You cannot find such a mass of egoists anywhere else as near Krishnamurti. Because the moment the egoist hears that no master is needed, he feels very happy, he says, right. Because he always thinks he is the ultimate. No need to surrender to anybody, because ego resists surrender. And this man says, no master is needed. Egoists feel very happy. Around Krishnamurti, you will find all sorts of egoists. Because it seems very good, very convenient. No need to surrender, that is what the ego asks. That's what the ego always insists, no surrender. Because once you surrender and a foreign element enters you, that's the meaning of a master. You say, now I will not listen to my mind, I have listened enough. And I have reached nowhere, I will not listen, now I will listen to you. Something foreign has entered, something that was never in you. A new element enters in you, and this new element becomes a crystallizing center. Now, the mind will say, do this, but you cannot listen to mind. You have to listen to the master. The mind will go on saying for many years, but if you go and listen to the master, by and by, the mind feels tired. Now you don't listen to him. You don't feed him. The mind feels starved. It goes on shrinking. A moment comes, it falls dead. It falls dead. In that very moment, you become awakened. What these people did on this poor old man? They helped to create an illusion. And the illusion was there. And it must have been very real, because tears welled up. They pointed out a mound, this is your father's stone. He could not help weeping aloud. Your father will die someday. Everybody has to die. And you will weep. And you will cry. Are you certain he was your father? Or somebody has played a joke? How you can be certain that he was your father? That is the difference between belief and faith. A woman knows that who is the father. That is faith. And a father simply believes that I am the father. But he doesn't know. There is no way to know it. A father is a belief. A mother is a faith. Faith depends on knowing. Belief depends on just believing. There is no base to it. How do you know your father is real and not a joke played on you? But if he dies, whether it is a joke or real makes no difference. Tears well up. You cry and you shout. And if somebody comes and says, don't bother much, he was not your father. Suddenly there will be a change. Then your father is not dead. You live in your mind. I have heard one house was on fire and the owner was crying and weeping. He was going mad. Then somebody said, why are you weeping and crying? Because I was present just yesterday, your son has sold the property. It is no more yours. The man said, yeah, is it so? Tears simply disappeared. And he was enjoying the whole scene, just like a spectator. And then somebody came and he said, yes, the talk was there. Why are you laughing and enjoying? It is your property. There was a talk to sell it, but yet nothing has been decided. Again tears welled up. He started beating his chest and says, I cannot be alive anymore. This is my whole life, my whole life's effort. And then the son came and he said, don't bother. Everything is okay. The money has been given. And the man is not aware at all. He lives in another town. He is not aware. The moment house got fire, I ran to the other town. Everything finished. I have taken the money. Now father is laughing and enjoying. This is your world. This is how you are behaving. Just thoughts, and then you cry and weep. And just thoughts, and then you laugh and enjoy. And just thoughts, you are happy. And just thoughts, you are miserable. Somebody has told you are beautiful and you are so happy. And somebody said, you look ugly and you are so unhappy. Just words. What are you doing? Become a little more alert. Otherwise, you will be very much embarrassed. When death comes, everybody is embarrassed. The whole life gone to dogs. As far as I know, at the moment of death, it is less a fear and more embarrassment. Because the whole thing comes. You were thinking this wife will go with you. Because she always said, I cannot live without you. And she is already planning to get remarried. Mullah Nasruddin's wife was dying. And he said, Nasruddin, at least one thing you must remember. I know you will get married again. No point in saying no. Don't try to deceive me. I know you will get married. But one thing you have to promise me. Don't give my clothes to the other woman. Nasruddin said, never. I will never give. And anyway, they will not suit Fatima. She is too thin. Already everything is decided. and you believed, and you wasted your life for children who don't belong to you, for a wife, for a husband, for money, for prestige, and you destroyed your whole life, the whole opportunity. One feels at death embarrassed. You may feel right now afraid of death, but when death comes, nothing can be done. One accepts it, but then the whole life seems to be absurd, meaningless. The man felt very much embarrassed, and when he reached N, his real hometown, and really saw the capital, and the shrine of his quarter, and his father's cottage and tomb, he didn't feel it so deeply. He learned something. He really learned something. He became a little more mature. Because what these tears signify if they can come just by a projection? What is the meaning of this all feeling, emotion? And it was just a mond, not your father's tomb, and you were crying. Now the real tomb is there, but what is the difference between a real tomb and a real tomb? It may be also be a mound. Somebody may be playing a trick. And even if nobody is playing a trick, what difference does it make? It was not your home, and somebody played a trick, and you felt so emotional and sentimental. This may be your home, but what is the difference? He learned. This is the message of this story. Learn through experience. By and by, all sentimentality stops, drops. And remember one thing. Sentimentality belongs to the mind, not sensitivity. Sensitivity doesn't belong to the mind. Sentimentality belongs to the mind. A man who is aware is absolutely sensitive, but not sentimental. And there is a vast difference. Absolute difference. What is sensitivity? Sensitivity is not a projection. And sentimentality is a projection. If this old man was really an awakened one, in the beginning, he would not bother to go to the old town where he was born. Because that is sentimentality. What difference does it make where you are born? You are the one who is never born. He will not be bothered where his father lived and where his father's tomb is. What difference does it make? Because the body comes from the earth and goes back to the earth, dust unto dust. The body is not your father. If the man was aware, you could not play any trick on him. In the first place, he would not bother. And even if he was passing from the town and somebody would have said, "This is your father's tomb," he would say, "It is okay. Everybody dies." He would not have felt embarrassed. There was no problem. Sentimentally, he will always feel embarrassed. A man of awareness is sensitive. Sensitive means if somebody is dying, he will serve. If somebody is dying and needs him, he will care. If somebody is dying, he will share whatsoever he can share. There is no point in crying and weeping, because you don't help that way. One man is weeping because he is hungry, and you sit by the side and you also weep, because you feel very much for that man. This is sentimentality. Your weeping will not become bread for him. He will remain hungry. And instead of one man weeping now in the world, two men are weeping. You have doubled crying and weeping, it is not going to help. Do something. A sensitive man will do something. A sentimental will weep and cry. And a sentimental will always be taken as if he is sensitive. And a sensitive man will not look as sensitive because he will be doing something. If someone is hungry, he will try to find something for him. If he is thirsty, he will go and fetch water. But you will not see tears welling up. And you will not see him beating his chest and rolling on the ground and saying that this man is hungry. You will not be able to see that he is sensitive because sensitivity is subtle. He cares. The difference is subtle, delicate. A Buddha will not weep because you are in misery. He will help. He will help you to come out of your misery. If you are in misery, a sentimental man becomes miserable himself. He will cry and weep, and you will feel that he loves you very much. This is not love. He is as ill as you are. If he really cares, he will do something. He will try to change. He will try to transform you. It happened, there was one woman, her only child died. And Buddha was in the town at that moment. The woman had only one child and her husband was already dead. Gautami was her name. So she started crying and weeping, and she will not allow the neighbors to take the dead body to burn it. She cling. She will not allow. And she carried the dead child all over the town, asking somebody to help, give some medicine. But people said, now nothing can be done. The child is dead, but she will not listen. Then somebody suggested, rather you go to Buddha. He is an awakened man. He can do a miracle. You go to him. So she ran there. What Buddha did? Not a tear came to his eye. The woman must have felt that he is very hard. He has no heart. He said that, don't you have any heart? My child is dead, do something. Just touch him. He will become alive. You are enlightened. You are a god. You can do anything. Just have mercy on me. Buddha said, I will do something. You do first one thing. Leave the dead child here and you go into the town. The town is not very big, only 300 people. You go to every door, knock the door, and just ask them one thing. Because I will need for the miracle few mustard seeds. But a condition has to be fulfilled. The child will come back. But you have to bring mustard seeds from a house where nobody has ever died. In her misery, the woman could not see the point. When you are miserable, your eyes are filled with so much tears, you cannot see. You cannot think clearly. See, then a dying man believes anything. A man who is drowning in a river even clings to a straw. A Buddha says, she ran from one home to another, knocked every door, and people said, woman, have you gone mad? mustard seeds we have, we can give it to you. The crop has just come. But the condition we cannot fulfill because many people have died in this house. Siren all over the town, running all over the town, knocking at doors, asking, and in every family somebody has died. No family is there where life has not been destroyed by death. By and by, tears dried. She started to understand what Buddha means. By the time she has completed the circle of the whole town, she was a different woman. She came to Buddha. Buddha asked, "Have you brought the mustard seeds?" She started laughing and she said, "You played a trick. Now initiate me into sannyas. I have come to understand that life is death. My child has died. And you were really compassionate. Even if you have done a miracle and the child had become alive, it will not lead anywhere. The child will have to die again. It would not have been a real miracle. And it would have deceived me further. You made me aware that whosoever is born is going to die. The child has died. The child's father has died. I am also going to die sooner or later. Initiate me. Teach me that which never dies. Teach me the deathless." And she said, "Forgive me, because I was unconscious. I have said something to you which was not true. I had said to you that you are hard. You are like a rock. Your heart is not a heart. But I know I was wrong." And not a single tear came to Buddha. He is not sentimental. He is sensitive. And when you are sensitive, only then you can help. If you are sentimental, you create more mess. When a man understands, he becomes more and more sensitive. He helps, he cares. And he will never feel embarrassed. A sentimental man will always feel embarrassed because something is wrong, you also know. You are behaving in a foolish way, you also know. When he reached in and really saw the capital and the shrine of his quarter and his father's cottage in town, he didn't feel it so deeply. He has learned a little. And if this learning goes on and on and on, a moment comes when you see the reality as it is. Then there is no misery. Because the whole mind has been dropped. Then you are face to face to the real. There is no happiness also, no unhappiness, because both are projections of the mind. And when both disappear, there is peace. When both disappear, there is a bliss. Don't misunderstand me. Bliss doesn't mean happiness. Bliss means absence of happiness and unhappiness both. Happiness will be disturbed by unhappiness. Unhappiness will be disturbed by happiness. They are polarities. The wheel is moving. Bliss is never disturbed. It is silence. It is peace. It is a tranquility. Absolute peace. You have come to understand. Now nothing disturbs. Now you move in the world with no mind. You move in the world with no projection. And then everything is beautiful. Not your beauty, of course. because your beauty carries ugliness in it. Now everything is beautiful, but this beauty transcends your beauty and ugliness. All dualities are transcended. Try to learn from every experience. That is the only meditation. Don't allow any experience just to go down the drainage. Learn something. Learning will be with you, the experience will go. Learning will be with you. And when accumulation of understanding comes to a certain degree, there is explosion. Just like when water is heated up to 100 degrees, the water disappears and becomes a totally different thing. The quality changes. It evaporates. Ordinarily, water flows downwards. But when it evaporates, it starts moving upwards. The dimension has changed. You are like water. If you don't learn, you will go on moving downwards. Learn. Learning is a heat, a seasoning, a maturity, a fire. Learn more, you create more fire within you. And then comes the moment of 100 degrees and a jump. And suddenly the downward dimension disappears. You are moving upwards. You are moving higher and higher and higher. You have become a cloud. This is possible only through experience, when experience becomes learning and learning becomes understanding. Understanding is the essence. It is not a memory. It is just the very essence of all that you have known. You cannot explain your understanding to anybody. No. It is not knowledge. It cannot be given. A master has to create situations for you to learn, to understand, to gather a momentum, a fire. You must have seen pictures of pyramids. They were made by very, very secret schools in Egypt. The word pyramid means fire within. And the pyramid has made in such a way that it accumulates energy. Just now, scientists have become aware that the shape of the pyramid is a great accumulator of energy. Just the shape. Just the triangular shape accumulates energy. They became by accident aware of the phenomena. One scientist was working in the pyramid of Giza. When he was working, a dog entered. Unknowingly, he closed the door and went away for a holiday. After 3 weeks when he came, the dog was found dead. But the body was mummified automatically. The dog was dead, but the body was not deteriorating at all. Then he tried many experiments on cats, mice, and he was surprised. Something miraculous is happening in the Giza. A body dies, it has to deteriorate. Then he tried small experiments. He made small model pyramids and put a mouse in it, and the mouse dies and is mummified. The body doesn't deteriorate. Now they have made a patent in Germany. They have made a cardboard pyramid for razors. You shave your beard and put the razor in the pyramid. Next day it is automatically sharpened again. And one single razor can do for the whole life. But the word pyramid means fire within. The whole human body is like a pyramid. If you move deeper, you will come to understand that near the navel, an energy shape exists which is triangular. And near the navel, just inside the triangle, in the middle, there exists a fire. It is a very, very tiny flame right now. If you learn more and your learning becomes understanding, you carry the essence of it, you will feel a heatness growing near the navel. In Japan, they call it hara. The heat grows. And as the heat grows near the navel, you start changing. And a moment comes when you feel a burning fire near the navel. It becomes almost intolerable. And then suddenly everything changes. On 100 degree, your body becomes totally different. The flow of the body is no more downwards. Sex disappears, because sex is the downward flow. Suddenly the energy is going upwards. And then the energy reaches to the topmost of your being, the Sahasrara, from where it enters into the divine. But learn more. Don't move unaware. Awareness is fire. And when Heraclitus says that fire is the root of all existence, he is right. He knows something. Fire is the root of all existence. Not the fire that you say. See, that fire is just one of the forms. Understanding is like fire. It burns you completely. You as you are right now, the ego, the mind, and it gives you a different dimension. You become a cloud and you move into the sky. You have gained wings. Don't allow any experience to move without learning something through it. Each single moment is valuable. Learn something. When tomorrow the sun rises, you should not remain the same. You must have learned these 24 hours is valuable. You must learn. And by learning, I don't mean that you should know more. You should understand more. So even an ignorant person can be a very understanding person. Ignorant in the sense that he is not educated. He doesn't know much. And a very educated person, an Oxfordman, can be absolutely non-understanding. He knows. So, can you feel the difference? Knowledge comes through memory, through mind. Understanding comes through experience, through existential experience, not through memory. Enough for today.